It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Nation. That's the Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, along with my second-in-command, producer Dave, and commander Chris. We are all coming to you from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, Oregon, and all of our affiliates on the Barbecue Nation and the Envision Radio Networks, we say hello. Now, barbecue has a history here in the USA, and Jim Ockmoody just wrote a short history of barbecue in America called Smoke Lore. It's not that short, but it's great reading. Jim spent 29 glorious years at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution writing about food, among other things. And Jim has been honored by the James Beard Foundation, Sigma Delta Chi, who I used to be a member of, and the Association of Food Writers. This week, our music is going to be with Charlie Daniels. And, of course, we'd like to thank the Painted Hills Natural Beef Company for sponsoring this show. Painted Hills Natural Beef, beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. So now let's get back and talk with Jim Ockmoody and his new book, Smoke Lore. It's a great book, a short history of barbecue in America. Jim is not a first-time author, but I really like this. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm a little sensitive by that subtitle, A Short History of Barbecue in America. My publisher wanted the short history in there to communicate to people that this wasn't a big, fat, dry, academic tome. And I think it does communicate that, but short makes it sound like I didn't do all my job. As you said, it ain't that short.
No, it's not that short, and you did do your job, I can tell you. It's a very thorough and interesting piece of work here. And, you know, I've been a barbecue guy for a long time. That's kind of how I got this gig. But also the history of things, you know, we pass down in everybody's family. You got grandma's recipe or this, or great Aunt Frida's recipe for that, or Uncle Jim's recipe for whatever. This is kind of the start in the United States of how things got here and then how we evolved from there. So first of all, I'll ask you the standard questions that they ask you in all these interviews. Why did you write this book? And then we'll get on to some more fun stuff. How's that?
Sounds good. I wrote the book because I was asked to. There was an exhibition at the Atlanta History Center, which is a big history museum, probably the best history museum in the Southeast in Atlanta. And they had this idea about 10 years ago to do an exhibition about the history and culture of barbecue. And I got pulled into it in degrees. At first, they asked me to be an advisor, and then they asked me to write the companion book, and then they asked me to be the guest curator for the show. So I, for about the last 5 years, I have just been up to my eyeballs in barbecue. But they didn't have to try very hard to ask me to do these things. I've always been interested in writing about food. I think it's a very fascinating window into our culture. And being a native Georgian who has a lot of barbecue history in my family tree.
Oh, you do, yes.
It's a particular interest to me, and I found it very fascinating. I mean, my central contention is that barbecue is probably deserves to be considered the most truly American food. There's that old saying out there about as American as apple pie, which is a nice saying, but it doesn't hold up to scrutiny. Apple pie was pretty much a British thing. Barbecue really is much more identified with America. It goes back to the earliest history of encounters between European settlers and Caribbean Indians. Really, barbecue as we know it today has roots in about five different continents, and it involves almost every major ethnic thread that makes up America. I think we have a great affinity for it, and I think it represents us very well. And I think it's no coincidence that when we celebrate independence, we usually do it with a barbecue.
Oh, yeah. I think that's more than fitting, you know, because man has been cooking with fire, open fire, for thousands of years. And, of course, we obviously have honed our skills a little bit since, you know, the first pterodactyl or something got thrown over an open pit. But it really is kind of an American thing. In your book, you point out, and I knew this before, but, you know, George Washington and the oxen and the setting of the cornerstone, him being a Mason and all that stuff for the Capitol, what did they have? They had a big barbecue. And it's always been a celebratory function for us here.
Yeah, when they laid the cornerstone for the United States Capitol building in 1793, it was a big Masonic ceremony with the first president, George Washington, a Mason, overseeing the ceremony. And when they had finished the consecration, they went and had barbecued ox. And what that shows you is that by the late 1700s, barbecue was already very well established as a celebratory meal in America.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, we've kind of taken that further. I mean, me living out here on the West Coast and starting my life as kind of a cowboy and a horse guy and all that stuff. You look in a lot of the movies and a lot of the advertising, and you point this out in the book, that they would always have the big Western barbecue. Well, if you look in some of the John Wayne movies and some of the other ones, they were roasting, you know, a half a steer or a half a ox or whatever you want to call it, doesn't matter. It's a big hunk of beef on there. And, you know, that was all part of the culture. And even though that was in the movies, that also happened in real life on the ranches and stuff when they would, you know, finish up drives or, you know, 4th of July's or whatever it was, that's how they did it. And it's quite fascinating to me how, you know, how we went from there over a period of years to, you know, a Weber gas grill, but it's still the same basic principle.
Well, you mentioned the movies. One of my favorite barbecue scenes in the movies is from the movie Giant in 1956. And, you know, there's a great scene where Rock Hudson's character has married Elizabeth Taylor's character. She's from the horse country of Maryland. He takes her back out to that big old ranch in Texas, and it's a total culture clash. And one of the first big events that she goes to is a barbecue outside that big house in the middle of nowhere with no trees, no shade, and hot as all get out. And they have barbacoa, and she's already feeling a little bit woozy from the Texas heat. And they go up to the serving line, And Rock Hudson says, "Leslie, this here's genuine barbacoa."
Yep.
and they pull back the burlap sack, you know, and there's a cow's head staring at her, and she passes out.
Yep. I will tell you a quick story about that. When I was in the Middle East in Saudi Arabia, they didn't call it barbacoa down there, but they were very proud of it. They had this huge chafing dish, a dish that I had never seen a similar one in like size before. And I'm going down the serving line, and they pull it off. And there is a whole sheep on this bed of rice, which is heavily infused with saffron, so it smells almost obnoxious. But the sheep had its head on, the eyeballs were there and stuff. And so and my friend kept teasing me. He said, "We're going to go to a goat grab. We're going to go to a goat grab." And I didn't know what in the hell he was talking about. Then I knew.
A goat grab is like a pig picking, I guess.
Yep, it's exactly what it is. It's just like a pig picking. But this one had the head on, and the eyeballs were kind of rolled back. And some of the other Western folks, like myself, they didn't take too kindly to that. I mean, they didn't participate, I'll put it that way. It was something. Real quick, we're going to have to go to break here, Jim, in just a second. But how did you pick where to get started with this? I mean, in books like this, you could have gone a million directions with this because there's so much information in what you put in here, and it just makes one think that there could have been dozens more. How did you go about saying this is where I start?
Well, you know, barbecue, as you mentioned, is sort of a timeless and universal cooking technique, and people have been doing it in many cultures around the world since cavemen, but America has probably the most developed culture around it. It started about 500 years. And where do you start that story? I zeroed in on where the very word barbecue came from. The book begins with the etymology of the word barbecue. Mm-hmm. We decided to call it barbecue, and how did that come about? And as it turns out, that's a neat place to start it, because it probably comes from it comes from Columbus's second voyage, with the Spanish sailors observing these Taino Indians cooking over these little devices that they translate as a barbacoa.
Yep.
And then over the next century, it becomes anglicized as barbecue. Following for something as universal and going back as far as this cooking technique, really zeroing in on the beginnings of it in the New World and on that word itself, it gives you a way to organize it.
Yep, it sure does. Hey, Jim and I are going to take a break. We're going to be back in just a couple minutes with more on his new book called Smoke Lore, A History of Barbecue in America. I omitted the word short for you there, Jim. Anyway, we're going to be back at Don't Go Away. Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. That's 503-982-2033. BarclaysBuySellPawn.com. Back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT, and today we're talking with Jim Ockmoody, who wrote a great book. I recommend it, called Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America. Jim hails from Georgia. Got a little barbecue going on down there. I've been to Georgia 2-3 dozen times in my life, and always had great food, great barbecue down there. So, you know, you talk about the native cultures and the Caribbean cultures, and of course, you know, the African culture. I mean, you address it very well in the book. It's a very sensitive subject for a lot of people, the slavery, but the Black culture brought in a tremendous amount of knowledge and experience in cooking barbecue foods.
Yeah, I mean, barbecue actually, I mean, the cooking technique in the New World was something that was done by the natives, and the word itself actually enters the language before slavery even comes to these shores. But of all the groups that had an influence on barbecue in America, I'd have to say African-American slaves were probably paramount. In the early days of barbecue, it was almost exclusively something that was cooked as a big event, celebratory food, and it really took root in the southern Atlantic colonies. And, you know, it was pretty much cooked at plantations, and the people who did the cooking were almost always slaves. I mean, George Washington, when he talks about going to a barbecue in his diaries, George Washington and his pals certainly weren't the ones who were cooking the meat. It was the slaves. So they had a real outsized influence on the development of barbecue. And I thought this whole – so many people when I was working on this book asked me, didn't Black people invent barbecue? And it's a really tricky question because they didn't. You can't say that any one group invented barbecue. It has a lot of different ethnic hands on it.
Sure.
But barbecue has been so profoundly identified with African Americans over the years in ways that are good and bad. You know, the admiring ways of their pit knowledge and stereotypical ways. But they've been so identified with it that it seems like they've invented it. So it's something that I wanted to deal with specifically in the book, that whole sort of complicated relationship there and why. I mean, when you really think about it, the two ethnic groups in America that are most identified with barbecue are Black Southerners and white Southerners.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. That's true. And it's too bad, you know, and reading some of the stories in your book about, oh, the booth that Martin Luther King always sat in, and when he would get those ribs, and it would, you know, Andrew Young said it would keep him up all night because he'd eat those ribs, but he'd write and think and do all that stuff all night. And you kind of think, well, you know, what does that have to do with anything? Well, it has to do with a lot, because one, there's a very huge historical figure. There's a lot of historical figures that are tied in with barbecue and outdoor cooking. You know, as we said, George Washington, but you know, you've got MLK there who just loved this stuff. And, you know, you go on through the book and name some other historical figures like that. But the Black influence, the African-American influence on barbecue has been so big. And I think we're finally learning from that. And I say that sincerely, is that, you know, we had a lot to learn from those folks. We just never took the time to do it.
Well, I think we actually did. We all along had learned a lot from them. A lot of our barbecue techniques actually came from them.
Uh-huh.
It's just that for a lot of the, in a lot of circles, that that debt was not acknowledged.
Sure.
And now I think it's being acknowledged a lot more. I know in the early days of the cook-off circuit tended to be very white. And a lot of the people who figured big in the cook-off circuit, there weren't that many African Americans. And there are reasons for that. But it sort of created this impression that barbecue was kind of like a white hobby activity. And, you know, if you look at the totality of barbecue in America, it ain't that at all, far from it.
Yeah, no, that's true. And you've got a picture of Big Mo in there. We've had Big Mo on the show a couple times. He's an interesting cat. By the way, he's lost a bunch of weight. I didn't know if you knew that, but
Not as Big Mo now. That's good. For him.
Yeah, he's if he put those bib overalls on now, he could put a second person in them. So
he needs to get some more publicity shots.
Yes, he does. He does. He still got the cigars, still got the cool glasses and stuff, but he's just a little less of him. You know, when you talk about barbacoa, I have a friend of mine who's a chef in Texas, Johnny Hernandez. He's got several restaurants there around San Antonio and Austin and that. But he has been messing around for years with barbacoa in pits in his backyard because he's now bringing it to the restaurant, is what I'm saying. But he takes a month every year and goes back to some villages where his relatives grew up, not him per se, because he was born in this country, but he goes back to Mexico to where like his grandparents were and his aunt and uncles and works with the local cooks there and studies what they do. It's really fascinating. Then he comes back and does the experiments in his backyard before he actually brings the dish to the restaurant scene. So, you know, there again, we've got somebody that's the Hispanic style, and some of it came from Spain, and then some of it was developed in Mexico. And that's a pretty big influence, too, wouldn't you say?
Barbacoa is a really interesting case because in many ways, barbacoa, it's a little bit confusing because it's got that original New World word for barbecue. But barbacoa itself has less of a relationship to classic, say, Texas barbecue, then it always looks to me like it's a little bit more like Kahlua pig in Hawaii.
Yeah.
it's kind of a related thing to barbecue, and obviously with that word, it's an intriguing sort of cousin of barbecue, but it's not, you know, if you're expecting it to be slow-smoked meat like we usually assume that American barbecue is, barbacoa is not quite that. It's kind of like an interesting cousin.
It is. So we're going to take a break here, and we're going to be back and talk more with Jim Akbuti and his book, the new book, Smoke Lore, Short History of Barbecue in America, right after this. So Jim and I are going to take a break, and you guys can listen to commercials. How's that? It's Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. That's Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033, 503-982-2033. That's Barclays, buysellpawn.com. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. A couple of things here before we get back and talk to Jim Akbuti about smoke lore. If you want to email us, it's bbqnation@salempdx.com. That's bbqnation@salempdx.com. You can find us on Twitter and you can find us on Facebook. And this show is being syndicated by Envision Radio Network. We want to say hi and thanks to them. So I think we got all that stuff covered now. We're going to jump back in here with Jim Akbuti, his new book, Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in the United States, or in America, I should say. Here's a question that's always kind of curious, just because of the work that I do, was barbecue always for big events, or did they do it on a almost daily basis in some parts of the country for, you know, preparing their food? Or was it just saved for festive occasions?
Barbecue up until until about 1900 was almost exclusively a big event food. If you go back and look at all the mentions of the word barbecue in digitized newspaper collections from the 1800s, it almost always refers to a community gathering, a reunion of Civil War soldiers, a community sort of celebration. By far the biggest thing is political rallies. Political events and political rallies. Most of the things you see in the newspaper are Whig barbecues and Democratic barbecues and Republican barbecues. So no, you do not get the sense that this is something people made on the weekend at home to feed the family like we do now. And it's interesting to me because it's like the sense of the word was completely different back then. When they talked about a barbecue, it was an event. Mm-hmm. Now, when we use the word barbecue, we almost always use it to refer to a restaurant or to the thing you're cooking in the backyard. And those are both modern senses of the word, because barbecue restaurants really didn't start coming about until around 1900, and they really didn't proliferate until automobiles and highways became a big part of the American scene in the 20s and 30s. And then backyard cooking, rubber kettles, brick pits, charbroils, all the big green egg, all those things.
Sure.
That's really, you find a few of those in the 1920s and 30s. But for the most part, that is a post-World War II development.
I know that, and people have heard me say this many times on the show, but I know our experiments at my house, even though we lived on a ranch, with barbecue, which was kind of this little wobbly-legged tripod. It wasn't really a Weber, because it wasn't deep like a Weber kettle, but I'm sure it was a Coleman or something my dad bought at the hardware store. But our skills were lacking, I'll put it that way. We burned a lot of chicken. I wish we'd have taken time, or my dad and mom would have taken time to, you know, go down south for a couple weeks and learn how to cook from... get some ideas from those folks, because we definitely put a dent in the chicken population, and not in a good way as far as usage. I'll put it that way.
Hey, look, I'm a fifth generation Georgian, and when I got married and started trying to figure out how to cook on a grill, I am elated at a lot of chicken too. I did what a lot of people don't know what they're doing do, which is I put barbecue sauce on the chicken when I was first starting to cook, and of course that's a good way to get charred chicken.
Oh yeah.
And the other thing is I remember when I had to go and ask my father, like, how do you build a charcoal fire? I'd seen him do it a bunch of times, but I just really had never paid much attention to it. I just wanted to know when the hamburgers are going to get done. And so really, it wasn't until a couple of years after we were married that I had figured out the whole, you know, how to start a fire. And it was a few years after that that I actually figured out, lo and behold, there's this thing called a chimney that makes it really easy, and you don't have to use a bunch of foul-smelling lighter fluid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that, you know. A learning example was that was I invited a friend out one time. We'd been... you know, hitting the cups pretty good, and invited a friend out. And I said, I'm going to cook you the best steak you ever had. Well, by the time he got there, the coals were pretty much gone. So I put some new coal, lifted the grates, put some new coals on it, and then I squirted lighter fluid across the grates. And, you know, I know he took a bite of that steak, and he was really nice about it. He ate the whole bloody thing, but it had to taste like Kingsford lighter fluid. I mean, it was just... you know, I wasn't very old at the time, was in my late teens, so you can probably forgive me for that, but that was really a dumbass mistake on my part.
Well, one of the things that really surprised me in researching this book was to find out that backyard cooking as a lifestyle thing practiced by millions of Americans now really didn't start in the South or in Texas, the barbecue hotbeds that you think about. It was really more of a development of California lifestyle. The first promotion of barbecue as a backyard cooking thing occurs in Sunset Magazine in the 19-teens and 20s out in California. And the first true barbecue cookbook was the Sunset Barbecue Cookbook, published in 1938. Now, calling it a cookbook is actually a little bit of a misnomer, because about, I'd say, three-quarters of that book is actually directions on how to build a brick pit in your backyard.
Yep.
But they got recipes in the back.
Yep.
And but it's fascinating to me, because you would think that stuff had started in the South and started in Texas, but it was such a given part of the culture in those places, and that you did it in a big community pit, or you dug a trench or something like that. It never really, other than people cooking on a sideways turned oil barrel or something like that, it just really wasn't where they came up with the idea of doing it as a leisure pursuit in the backyard.
I know that they did it on a lot of, as dude ranches kind of became popular. This is well before World War II, but dude ranches like in Arizona and some in California and some of that, and these health spas and things, but you could go ride horses and do whatever. They would build those, kind of in ground, but they would be cinder block pits, maybe two rows of cinder blocks above the ground too, like that. And they'd make these big grates and stuff. And some of the horse ranches I worked on back in the 70s still had those from back in the 30s. They didn't use them anymore. They were just kind of remnants. They were, back behind a shed or something like that. But it was pretty interesting to see how they actually built them back then.
And those are the kinds of pits that you would find behind a church in the South, where they would do a barbecue two or three times a year, or behind the Elks Club, or in a park or something like that. That's the way that you found barbecue cooked in the South. You didn't necessarily have one of those in your backyard, unless you might have one of those if you had a farm or you had a big backyard and you were really into it. But those kinds of things were the way the barbecue was cooked down here. It's the way my grandfather cooked it. My grandfather was a big pit master in Northwest Georgia who cooked at a bunch of community barbecues back during the 30s and 40s and 50s. And we have a picture of him from 1956 or 7 with his barbecue crew. And they are standing in front of a pit, which mm-hmm. is dug into the ground, that has a low cement block walls around it, coming up, no more than 2 feet. And they're standing there as pit crew. It's like six men standing there. My grandfather's holding a butcher knife. My uncle's holding, and a couple other men are holding shovels, because that was a big part of the job, was shoveling the coals from the burn fire over to the cooking pit.
Yep, absolutely. When we get to the after hours part of the show, I'll tell you one of my experiences about doing whole hogs with a guy who I didn't even know he knew how to cook, but he did, and he built this contraption, and we would roast these whole hogs on this, it was a pit with a skewer that moved and stuff like that very slowly. But that was some of the best eating I had ever had in my life. It was so good, but I didn't know this guy could cook. Like I said, we just went out and did it.
He must have really known how to cook, because whole hogs are the toughest thing.
They are tough, but one thing I learned about cooking whole hogs: pair of pliers, needle nose if you got them, and a cold beer. And when you go by and you can peel off that cracklings, man, that is living. I'm just telling you, that's just, you got grease running down your chin, and you got a cold beer, and that just makes me hungry just thinking about it.
So makes you want to snort.
Yes, it does. It really does. Jim and I are going to take a break. We're going to come back and wrap up the over-the-air part of the show, and then we're going to go into the after-hours bit. So stay with us, and Jim Akhmoudi and I will be back right after these messages from our sponsors. Stay with us, please. Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. That's 503-982-2033. BarclaysBuySellPawn.com. Everybody, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. I'm JT. We've got Jim Ocmoody from Georgia with us today on Jim's new book, Smoke Lore, The Short History of Barbecue in America. Jim is a very well-known author. He used to work for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And we found out we know some people in common from down there. So he and I will talk about that. You guys don't get to listen to that. Also, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends from right here in the Pacific Northwest. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Jim, when you got the assignment, took the book, you start doing the research. It takes a while to do these. This isn't something you kick out in 3 or 4 months. What's the most interesting or the most, the fact or piece of information that you've grabbed onto that you found most most fascinating in writing this book?
Well, I mentioned that the overarching central point of it is that barbecue is the most truly American food. And one of the things I discovered that really led to me to believe that strongly is that we have a tendency in the Deep South to be very parochial about barbecue. We tend to think that barbecue is, we have a very fundamentalist definition that barbecue has to be a very slow smoked pig, like you see in Georgia and Alabama and South Carolina and Tennessee and North Carolina. And if it isn't that, it isn't barbecue. Yeah, they got that beef thing going over there in Texas. We like that. We respect that. But barbecue is a Dixie pig. That's sort of the attitude of a lot of the people who deeply love barbecue in the South. And what you find out when you really start researching this is you find out that barbecue is a lot more national than you think it is. It first took root in the southeastern United States, in the southern Atlantic colonies, and another early place was definitely Texas. But there are a lot of barbecue branches on this big family tree. Santa Maria, Tri-Tip Barbecue, mm-hmm. California. Barbaco in Texas, smoked salmon in the Pacific Northwest, the Cornell chicken in upstate New York, pit beef in Baltimore, the Kahlua pig in Hawaii. There are just all sorts of different ways that people have cooked the available protein that they had on fires or over smoke. And these, you can be really fundamentalist about this, like a lot of Southerners are, and say, well, that's not barbecue. But I actually prefer what the Kansas City Barbecue Society has done. When they were first getting going and had to decide, do we want a big tent, or do we want to tell people this is what barbecue is and that ain't barbecue? They decided they wanted a big tent. They wanted everybody in who was interested in cooking over smoke and fire. We can deal with the finer points later. They want people to come in who are enthusiastic about this kind of cooking and want to know more about it, even if their definition of it might not exactly fit what a contest judge says. And I think that's the way to go with this. I think that I wanted to have a big, wide-open look at this type of cooking in America, and I came to believe that it's a lot more national than I thought it was. And I came to embrace this sort of ecumenical, big tent approach to it.
For people, it's not at the highest level of the awards chain right now, but they are doing that, and more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in all the different things that people cook over smoke and fire, and I'm interested in all the different things that they use the word barbecue to describe it. I mean, I think it's interesting that when, large numbers of Korean folks started moving to America, they had these indigenous ways of cooking ribs and meat over there, which in their, they certainly could never call barbecue. But when they came over here, they started calling it barbecue because that's the word Americans used and would recognize. And so if you look I think there's something like 300 places that identify as barbecue in metro Atlanta, and I'll bet you 25% of them are Asian.
I won't take that bet, Jim, because I would lose. I would lose. The name of the book is Smoke Lore, a short history of barbecue in America by Jim Akmuti, and it's published by the University of Georgia Press. It's a great book. You can go to the University of Georgia publisher website. I'm sure at this point you can get it on Amazon and some of the bookstores around in
your
area.
You can get it on Amazon, IndieBound, University of Georgia website, Barnes & Noble, all the folks, and support your local independent bookstore. And if they don't have it, ask them to order it because they will like it and other people will like it too.
They will. Jim and I are going to be back in a couple of minutes in After Hours. And so we're going to be doing that on the website. And for those of you who are on the network, we've got a show I did a little bit ago with Jeff Thiessen, who is the CEO of Pit Boss and Louisiana Grills. So that'll be coming up in hour two. So until then, enjoy your barbecue.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Envision Networks and Salem Media Group. All rights reserved. Copyright 2019.